Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Just been not really doing anything. It's freezing today, so kind of just it's a bit of a boring day. It was just watching the highlights from the Australia-India test last night because, yeah, I'm not that committed. But, just nothing really exciting. It's just freezing in the UK.
It is, yeah. It was snowing in Warwickshire today. I went out for a little bit of a run in a nearby field. Very cold, a lot of snow, quite deep actually at times as well. Caught me off guard on a couple of instances. But yeah, it's just that kind of thing at the moment, isn't it? Of course, with all the Southern Hemisphere cricket on early mornings. I mean, for me, I was up at about 6 o'clock this morning today, having to write up match reports and do a bit of analysis. But yeah, not complaining. It's good to have some cricket back, I suppose. Yeah, I don't think either of us are complaining about that. But no, Joe, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well. Of course, that's fantastic. And also joining us today on the County Cricket Podcast is up-and-coming Warwickshire batsman Dan Mousley. So Dan, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, all good, lads. Thank you for having me on. And a few lads have been on the podcast and spoke really good things about it. Yeah, today's been a pretty quiet day. We have Fridays off, quite a few of the lads do, at the Bears. Bit of a run this morning. So I'm pretty chilled that day, cooked a bit of lunch, apart from that. Very, very quiet for obvious reasons.
Fair play. I have to ask though, Dan, what's the lunch of choice? What did you whip up?
Lunch of choice. I had scrambled eggs, piece of toast, and some bacon. That's what I had.
Fair enough. Better than mine. I think I had tuna sandwich. Yeah, just one of those days,
it's
I suppose.
Not a bad option.
It's not bad, but it's not exactly a scrambled egg, toast, and bacon. So
I have too much free time on my hands. I think in a minute.
Don't we all? I think everybody listening to this as well can relate to that, unfortunately, at the moment in the UK. Yeah. But yeah, it's funny as well. You mentioned about the ex-guest on our podcast, George Garrett. That was a funny podcast, wasn't it, Joe? And I think in teammates, he stitched you up a couple of times, Dan. So you will have an opportunity to get back at him today. But talking of today's podcast then, just for the listeners at home, basically we're just going to be talking to Dan about his early cricketing journey, his fantastic 2020 season with the mighty Warwickshire. And then, of course, as I've just alluded to there, we are going to wrap up today's podcast with a good old-fashioned segment of teammates. So, Dan, to kickstart today's podcast then, we'll start right at the beginning of your cricketing journey then. What's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
First ever memory would have been watching my family play at Netherwhitaker Cricket Club, which is my home club, where I started my junior cricket at as a kid. Brothers still play there now, uncle still plays there now. The whole family is very heavily involved, so it would have been that, going to watch my dad and uncles play. A few of my best mates I've grown up with at Whittaker have played on the sideline with me as a kid, so we still keep in close contact. I speak to them every day and stuff like that, and obviously I live very close to the ground, so I'm there every Saturday if I'm free. So yeah, that's one of my first memories. And then it would have been, I said, playing junior cricket at Netherwhitaker. Started very young. I just remember my uncles and my dad just bowling cricket balls at me all day, all night, whether that was at the ground or whether that was at my nan's house or wherever. I was just hitting a bat and a ball. So yeah, that's stuck with me now. I'm still at 19, still doing exactly that and still loving it.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And of course, a very heavily family influence there then, I suppose, for you, Dan. And I do just have to ask this, I suppose, because we don't really touch upon this often. But you mentioned there about going down to the cricket club, and obviously cricket was a massive, obviously, part of your life back then. But were you also into multi-sports? Did you also have other games that you could almost draw skills upon, per se?
Yeah, I love my football. Obviously, just speaking just before the podcast started, yeah, I love my football. Been going down to Villa Park probably since the age of three or four, which is very, very young, but I love it. I love the football. I love watching a lot of football. I used to play it a bit as a kid. Weren't any good, but like just enjoying the game and getting out and about playing football. We obviously, for obvious reasons, now we can't do that because of cricket and the rules like that. But yeah, I love football. And then school, I played rugby. Obviously, our school, they played rugby in the winter, cricket in the summer, with a little bit of hockey involved in the winter months. And yeah, I started playing rugby at the age of, properly started playing rugby at probably the age of 11, 12 when I went to school, secondary school. and played a little bit of hockey in the latter years, where just before sixth form, then going sixth form, took up hockey because I could not take rugby anymore. When you're playing against lads who are 2 years older than you, and I was only small at the time, I had very little interest in that because it's too cold and you just get absolutely battered. So yeah, I started playing hockey, and to be fair to the hockey, it's been good for my cricket, to be honest. Reverse sweep, stuff like that. It's fun playing hockey because I'm obviously a left-handed batter in cricket, but I play golf and hockey right-handed. So it's very, very easy to play those sort of shots because my hand-eye coordination and the skills I took from hockey and golf.
Well, I'm glad that you've mentioned that, because it was Kevin Peterson, I believe, during the summer, and he mentioned about almost that multi-sports aspect, and he used to play a lot of hockey as well, and that really almost developed his wrists, developed the hand-eye coordination. And just hearing that, Dan, it is interesting, because we are going to talk, obviously, about your cricket as the podcast progresses, but your reverse sweep is absolutely magnificent. Really is. It's got a touch of almost Sam Billings, if I was to make a comparison about it. Just very free-flowing, very fluent. So that is quite interesting, and I suppose that is... I want to say, almost a good piece of advice for youngsters as well. If you are interested in furthering your cricket game, this is something that multiple professionals have done. They've gone into other sports. Hockey is a fantastic one. Tennis as well, with the backhands and stuff. It just generates that wrist movement, doesn't it? And makes it a bit more natural. So
yeah, it does.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by that then. And that actually does explain why the sweep shot is such a natural part of your arsenal then. But bringing it back to your early cricketing days then, who would you say that you looked up to in the world of cricket? Who are your cricketing inspirations, per se?
So, the first one would have been Andrew Flintoff, just from the 2005 Ashes. I was only 4 at the time, but I watched all the box sets as a kid. I sat a proper badger, but I love the game. So, watching Andrew Flintoff as a kid, just everything he did. He was a match winner, wore his heart in his sleeve, could whack it out of the ground and bowl 90 mile an hour, which I definitely can't do. He's definitely not bowl 90 mile an hour, and I can't hit it further than him. Another one would be Ian Bell, for obvious reasons. Started joining Warwickshire at the age of 8, and watching Belly all the way through his career, whether that was for England or playing for Warwickshire, and then getting the opportunity to play with him was quality. And obviously my batting coach with the England under 19, so he's had a massive influence on my career to date, on the pitch, off the pitch. He's been brilliant for me, so I'd say them two people have been probably my biggest influences on my career. Watching the game, and then being lucky to be able to play with Belly last season.
Yeah, I mean, some legends there. Do you know the best thing about that? The answer is, you are also not old enough to remember the 2005 Ashes. You know, like as it was happening.
To be fair, there's a few things I remember about it. I used to get as a child, I used to get shoved in front of the TV, and I'd sit there for hours and watch it. It was on Channel 4, I think it was then, not on Sky or anything like that. There's a few things I remember, and one of them's the Edgbaston game. I think I sat in my nan's living room when that happened. My dad was there at the test match. I can't remember which day it was. Might have been day 2. And I remember I think I was going to school actually, and I said to him, like, where are you going? He said, I'm going to cricket. And I was like, I wanted to go. I think I was 4 at the time, but I still remember those little things. Obviously I don't remember a great deal, but there's a few things you remember. It's just a shame I couldn't really remember it properly. I was being so young at the time.
Yeah, and we definitely empathise with that. So what would you say that first Ashes series you can like actually remember watching properly is? Would you say it's 2009?
2009, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my first proper one. 2007 was, I remember like snippets and stuff like that. Like coming down in the morning, seeing the score, but I don't remember a fat lot about that. I don't know a great deal about that.
Terrible series.
Yeah, looking back,
but it good thing to forget. Series, yeah.
2009. So Monty Panesar and Jimmy Anderson. I remember batting at Cardiff. I remember that. I sat in the living room actually at the time, watching that happen. Just come back from Drayton Manor. That's how much I remember that. Came back from Drayton Manor, put that on, and then, funny enough, it was on Sky the other day. I think it was. Might have been yesterday actually. Just saw it flicking through on Sky, and. The Edgbaston test, which was third test it would have been, because Lords was second. Yeah. I remember that because I was there for day 5. I just remember North and Clark batting. But apart from that, I don't remember much about that. It actually rained on day 1, so I remember that. And then Headingley, I was at my mate's house actually, when we lost the toss. Actually, no, we won the toss, batted first and got skittled for not many, so I remember that. And then Oval, I was on holiday, so all the way through that series, I knew what was happening. So
yeah, like us, that, I mean, I guess, as I said earlier, it's good that we have someone who can empathise with us a little bit in that. But moving back on to yourself, Dan, how would you describe yourself as a cricketer and how would you describe your game?
I would describe my game and as a cricketer, probably say confident, aggressive, passionate, wanting to win. I hate losing. I hate losing, whether that's anything.
Attitude.
I've always been a terrible loser. Those are the four things I'd so far describe myself as. Yeah, it's probably about it, really.
I mean, four very good adjectives, I suppose. Four very promising ones for Warwickshire fans such as myself. But yeah, I don't think I can
determined,
really...
Determined, another one. There's another one.
There we go, make it a fifer. But yeah, I mean, not bad adjectives at all. And yeah, I would agree, especially after watching the Under-19 World Cup, I think, yeah, that pretty much encompasses your game pretty well, to be honest, especially after the Sri Lanka performance. That was absolutely incredible. I suppose we'll talk about that later. But let's start off with county cricket then, Dan, because obviously you play for Warwickshire, my home county as well. What were your first ever memories of Warwickshire? What do you remember of maybe going to Edgbaston, for example, back in the day?
I remember my first county trial. It was in the indoor squad. I was 8 years old. And funny enough, the lad who I'm going to mention now, he plays rugby for England, Ollie Lawrence now. And he was in the age group above me, and I was trialing the year below. And I reckon he got me out 6 times in 20 minutes, 15 minutes of batting. I was 8 years old, and literally I'd never faced someone like that for that period of time. I was a little off spinner back there. I could bat a little bit. And yeah, I just remember getting cleaned up. And I went to my next trial the week after, and went okay. Didn't get in. Went to the district festival, which is done a little bit differently now. But I remember the district festival, very wild. Who'd have been there? There'd been Tom Banton would have been there. Henry Brooks would have been there. Ethan Brooks would have been there. Myself and a few others who I'm sure I've been missing. Rob Yates, another one who'd have been there at the time. And I got selected to play, get in the under-10s when I was 8. So I was under-9 at the time and got selected to get into the summer squad. My first game against Derbyshire, so I remember that very well. I got 3 freshmen. I've actually batted at 12, which shows, so obviously used to play 12 men, rotate off and on. I was batting at 12, so I remember that. And then going to watch Warwickshire would have been, I'm trying to think, my first Warwickshire game. It'd have been quite late, actually. It probably would have been just before I got signed, maybe. Just before I got selected to go in the under-10s would have been around that time. Don't remember a great deal about going to Edgbaston at that period of time. I used to go and watch the football every weekend. That's the one thing I remember going to sport. And then once you got selected, then you end up popping by when you've got a age group session, you end up popping into the ground, seeing a little bit of cricket and then watching T20s, 50 overs as a kid, and then being lucky enough now to play in it. So
yeah, not bad, I suppose, at all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Joe, what was your first ever county game? What do you remember from your first game for Lancs?
I probably went to one earlier than what I'm going to say, but I think I probably mentioned it before, is when I distinctly remember we wore a green shirt in sponsorship for Macmillan Cancer Support. It was a T20 Roses game against Yorkshire. I just remember we wore a green shirt. Little did I know that was in a foreshadow of the future when we wore those green one-day shirts, which were interesting. I probably went to one earlier, but I don't really necessarily remember it. So yeah, that was the first one that I distinctly remember. So yeah.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, a Roses match, yeah, doesn't really get much bigger than that.
Yeah, exactly.
I won CB40, Edgbaston 2009, Glamorgan. See, this is the difference. I properly remember mine because it was quite a memorable, I suppose, pathway into that game. Because I won Most Improved Player of the Season. I won a cricket bat, which was a Slazenger V100 Prodigy, I think that's what it was called. Yeah, I think that's what it was. I'm pretty sure I still have it somewhere in the attic or somewhere. And then I won tickets to that game. So I went there with my aunt, and I think it lasted for 18 overs. So I watched a bit of Herschel Gibbs bat, but that was it. The Bears never batted. And from there, I don't see where the love of Warwickshire really came from. It wasn't really like a standout game to get into county cricket.
It's not much to remember either, is it, really?
It's a weird one, isn't it? It's a weird one. But yeah, from there on, yeah, pretty much been obsessed with the Bears, and of course had a very, very successful decade in the 2010s. But Dan, going back onto your journey with the Bears, obviously we have to talk about your debut, because that must have been an absolutely incredible moment. And I just wanted to ask, because you've been through pretty much the entire system at Warwickshire, right from the academy all the way up to senior cricket, how momentous of an occasion was that for you to go out there and represent your home county?
Oh, it was brilliant. I found out the day before that I was playing. I remember Jeets walking over to me and said, just thought I'd let you know, you're play tomorrow, you're about 5. Congratulations. And I was like, oh, okay, brilliant. I couldn't wait. I remember going down to the team coach. I'd done well in the second team in a few games previous. And I was sort of expecting to play, but not expecting to play, if that makes sense. I thought, oh, there's a chance, but not sure. Then when Jeet said I was playing, I was buzzing. I was rooming Michael Burgess, I was. And I think I was watching Love Island the night before, something like that. So I was just so excited. I just wanted to get going. To represent your home county was brilliant. And to do it with Robbie Yates and Henry Brooks as well, who I've grown up playing with, was brilliant. It didn't, let's say, didn't go as well as I wanted it to. Don't get me wrong, I only got 3 and 0. I got first ball, actually. Harmer got me out first ball, second innings. But I got to actually took a lot of confidence from that first innings, because I knew I could do it. Went out there first ball, and I think got bowled to second or third slip. And I was like, oh, okay, everyone's... I remember saying to Paul Farbrass, I was like, oh, okay, everyone bowls a bad ball. So I was fine. Didn't go as well as I wanted to, but I took an awful lot of confidence from that. I learned an awful lot. So yeah, that was brilliant to make my first test debut for Warwickshire.
Yeah, I bet it was.
If anyone's going to get you out as well for a first ball duck, Simon Harmer's not exactly a... It's not like you got out to a part-timer, yeah. I mean, this guy gets tens and tens of wickets every season, so yeah.
Very good bowler.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Did you feel like your mindset had changed at all from maybe going... obviously, the occasion is bigger for yourself on a personal level, making your first-class debut, but how do you feel your mindset maybe changed from playing a red ball game for the second team? Do you feel it changed at all, or was it just like any other game?
I was probably a little bit more nervous, I'm being honest. As a kid, I used to get really nervous for batting and stuff like that. But yeah, I was a little bit nervous. I was more excited, to be perfectly honest, because I've always wanted to do that. You got to look at it. Nerves are a good thing because it gets you going. And you've always wanted to play for Warwickshire as a kid. So when you get the opportunity, you say, actually, I want to be here. I deserve to be here. So went out there, I was really excited. Didn't go as well as I wanted it to. Yeah, probably the difference between second team, first team cricket is... like maybe the quality of the opposition. Second team cricket, you might have a couple of trialists playing, or some people aren't fully fit, or you play a team which haven't got many signed players, where you're playing against in a first last game of cricket, you're playing against international cricketers. So Peter Siddle was playing, Simon Harmer was playing, Cook was playing, Wesley was playing, Dan Lawrence, who's now playing for England now, was playing. And so yeah, there was a big jump between second team cricket to first team cricket at that time. But yeah, I loved it. I was just so excited to get going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some pretty, well, I mean, legends really there. Peter Siddle, legend. Alistair Cook. England's greatest ever batsman. Yeah. So yeah. I assume that must be quite daunting as well for yourself. You know, playing against these guys on your debut, I guess that... I mean, Essex are the best team in the country in red ball cricket as well. So
yeah, I guess it is quite daunting, but it didn't really affect me because I've always wanted to do it. So I was just like, oh, okay, I'm playing against them because I've performed well and I've worked hard.
Yeah,
it's not like I don't deserve to be there. I deserve to be there because I've been performing well and how hard I was working. But yeah, it was... when you got Alistair Cook at first slip, you're like, wow, this is totally different level of cricket now. This isn't playing age group cricket. This isn't playing second team cricket. This isn't playing club cricket. This is a different level. And Test cricket, for lads who are playing Test cricket now, is an even different level. I must say, I look back at it with good memories because I learned an awful lot from it. Didn't go as well as I wanted to, I'll keep on saying, but I learned an awful lot.
Yeah, that's the thing though, isn't it, about a debut and stuff? It's meant to be the almost first step on the learning curve. Not everybody goes out there and does an Alistair Cook Test debut, for example, and goes and scores a ton or gets a fiver, for example. I also just like that in the segment before as well, Dan, we mentioned about nerves, because I believe that this was Kevin Peterson again. We're almost treating him like the cricketing gospel. But he said something, I can't remember exactly what channel or something it was on, but he said, nerves show that you care. And as soon as you can conquer those nerves, yeah, you feel like you're on top of the world. And it's interesting as well, because with batsmen, it's quite a common occurrence. If anybody's ever seen AB de Villiers before he goes out to bat, his legs are shaking, he's got a load of sweat dripping down his face. He looks like one of the most nervous people on the planet. And then as soon as he enters the middle, his arena really, the one that he's owned for so many years now, he just looks so assured and composed within himself. So that is just quite interesting. I was quite intrigued to actually learn that.
Yeah, it's a good attitude to have. Because like I said, nerves are actually a really good thing. Because like I said, shows you care and gets you fired up, gets you ready to go out there and perform.
Exactly. Yeah,
without doubt. And there's actually one more thing I'd like to ask about that game. Did Alistair Cook sled you when you went out?
He said one thing he did. I walked out the bat, had my shirt untucked. So I'm not really too fussed what I look like when batting. Sometimes I could be out of shirts untucked or pad straps hanging out. That's to be perfect. The last thing I was thinking about was my shirt being tucked. And he was like, oh, John Lewis isn't going to be happy with that, walking out to bat with your shirt untucked. John Lewis was my under-19 head coach, and I was going to the 19s just after the game. And I was like, oh, is that you? Alex Cook just said something to me. That was the only thing he said. It was the only thing he said. So, but like, I just smiled. I didn't know what to say. I was just smiling. And I made sure second innings, I came up with my shirt tucked in. But got first ball, so I might as well have just walked out there with nothing on.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's pretty weird as well walking out there and Alistair Cook's just standing at first lift, just having a chat with you, I guess. Yeah. It must be pretty surreal, really. But yeah. And what would you say, well, let's just take your whole career in general, like your whole career in general. Mm-hmm. What kind of lessons would you say you learned or you have learned so far?
What have I learned? That's a good question. I've learned an awful lot of things regarding like being backing yourself. There's no point changing the way you play because you're now playing in the first team. You take whatever you've learned from playing all age group cricket, second team cricket, go into that game of cricket and you don't change. You bat the way you've always batted because that's the reason you're there in the first place. There's no point changing something which works for you all the way through. And knowing that you're good enough, understanding you are there to perform. You're there because you have performed in second team cricket, age group cricket, under 19 cricket. You're there because you're good enough. And probably another thing is everyone's human. Everyone bowls a bad ball. That doesn't change. Might be less frequent bad balls, but if you graft hard enough and wait for someone to come in your area and be patient, that will definitely happen. So this is more Red Bull cricket, this is. The other two can relate to all three formats. So yeah, those are the three things for me. I've probably learned a great deal.
Fair enough. Yeah. I also like that again, because someone who just straight into my mind, I suppose with all three of those, would be Dom Sibley. When he first came into the England setup and people were moaning about, oh, he bats too slow, this, that, the other. And there was almost this element of doubt creeping into his mind about, should I change something? But he didn't. And then he went and produced that magnificent 133 not out in Cape Town. So that is a fantastic piece of advice, I think, for young cricketers as well. I know, Dan, we're talking as though you're like this experienced county veteran. You're only 19, but I must say that you've got a very mature head on your shoulders. So that's, again, something which is very, very positive, I suppose, for Warwickshire fans such as myself. And of course, just having belief. It's so important in the game of cricket because you're going to have these bumps in the road. Joe, we talk about every single podcast, don't we, about cricket being a roller coaster. But it's about understanding that there's going to be positives to come out of your failures. So, yeah, very, very good piece of advice there, Dan, I must admit. And also there, you just alluded to the under-19s. We mentioned it pretty much at the beginning of the podcast as well. We have to speak a bit about that because that was an incredible tournament for yourself. Was it 241 runs in five innings?
I'm not entirely sure what the figures were. I've got a few, like, you won't be able to see, but I've got a couple of shirts here. One's from the under-19 game at Sri Lanka, which all the lads signed. I've got the match stump with a few of my figures and stats on there. But yeah, that was a great trip. Didn't go as well as we all wanted it to. Obviously, that Australia game, we should have been through to the quarterfinals. I think it would have been quarterfinals. Yeah, it would have been quarterfinals against India, but we didn't. Obviously, we lost to Australia and then we're into the plate final. And then it's where they're... You try and learn as much as you can. For me, I love winning games of cricket, whoever we're playing. So it was just carrying on that and trying to learn as much as I can. from Belly, from the other coaches, from Min Patel, who was the bowling coach at the time with the England under-19s, and was just trying to learn as much as I can from that trip. And I must say, a great trip. Learned an awful lot from it.
And you mentioned there Sri Lanka. We just have to quickly touch upon that knock, because it was staggering. And for anyone who wants to watch part of this knock, I think you can find it on the ICC website. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, Joe, we mentioned about Wayne Madison being full of sweeps. I mean, Dan, ridiculous amount of sweeps. Can't even begin to count how many there were. But what's going through your mind on that day? Because you looked absolutely unstoppable out there in the middle for England.
What was going through my mind? Oh, that's a good question. To be perfect, not a great day. I was just so excited to get out there. It's only, I think it might have been the third time I opened the batting. And we played Zimbabwe the game before, and I got 25 off probably about 13, 14 balls, and was batting well. And I remember getting out reverse swing to this off spinner who wasn't turned. I should have hit him straight. Swept him before the ball before. Tried to reverse sweep him. Got bowled. Walked into the dressing room, and I was like, what have I done? I've got another, I think it would have been 43 overs to bat. Sat down. And then went and sat on the balcony, and Belly and Min were there. And Belly was like, what have you done that for? I was like, oh, mate, I'm going to be honest. I thought it was the right shot. Just poor execution. And then Min was like, come on, Dan, like, be honest. And I was like, that's what I generally thought. And they're like, okay. And then we spoke for half an hour it had been. So me, Min and Belly get on really well. And we have very honest chats, which is so, so important to have honest chats as a player. Because those are the times you learn the most, is when someone's honest and frank with you. And he basically said, you can do a lot better than that. If you batted 50 overs there, you'd have got a big, big score. And you're batting really nicely. And if you get the opportunity to go into open the batting against whoever it was, whenever we played the next game, you got to learn from that. And I was like, okay. Like, sat down, took what everything they said and said, yeah, you know what? Actually, they're spot on. It's two great players. Min took over 800 first test wickets for Kent. As a great, great man. Could not speak highly enough of him. And then obviously Belly playing 100 plus test matches, and someone who knew my game very, very well. And still does know my game very well. And I went to that Sri Lanka game, and I was just excited to get out there. And I knew my game plan. And that was literally, right, just you give yourself 30 balls. And I've got it written down in my phone. I still look at it every time I play a game of cricket. Give myself 30 balls and see where you're at. And I took away from that. Funny enough, 30 balls in, I'm on 32, I reckon I'd have been in that Sri Lanka game. So I'm going to run a ball, doing my job. And funny enough, you mentioned the sweep. So Belly said to me on the morning of the game, he was like, you're not playing a reverse sweep till you're past 50. So I was like, okay, no worries. And that's why I was just going straight up. It got so many runs that threw mid on against spin. Pretty much just knocking it down the ground. Obviously, when they came down leg side, I swept it. That's one of my options. And I got to 15. Another message comes out. And Belly was like, you're not playing. If it's reverse suit to you on 75. Okay, no worries. Another message came out. I was on 75. You're not playing a reverse suit to you past 100. Got past 100. Another message came out. Just carry on batting. Carry on batting. I think I only got 111 or anything. But every time he came out and stuff like that, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I learned so much from that Zimbabwe game, and I've got so many options to hit the ball. I don't need to play anything out the box. If the time's right, you can play it. But the field wasn't right at the time. I could just carry on knocking it down the ground. And there's so many things which Belly's spoken about me batting, which I've got written down in my phone, which I read whenever. Because I just think that's a really, really good thing to have. And have a few things which you can note down, and what you've learnt from the game, how you felt during the game, and then you can take it into your next batting session. So yeah, I learnt an awful lot from that Sri Lanka game, and obviously we went on to win that game of cricket. And yeah, it was a brilliant game.
It was indeed, yeah. Very, very good performance from England in that plate final. And I suppose that is a fantastic way to bring up the influence of Ian Bell. Because this is something which was asked to us, I think actually last year now, it would have been, wasn't in 2021, but it was from a Warwickshire fan on our Twitter, and he asked about whether or not you had taken a big influence from Ian Bell. Of course, for those who don't know Ian Bell, he's one of our county's finest ever players, and he's an absolute legend, got the most silky, smooth, majestic, elegant, I could throw the thesaurus at you, and there may not be a word that best describes Ian Bell's cover drive. But Dan, I did just want to ask this. How big of an influence has he had on your game? Because I'm listening there and you've got all of these almost gems of wisdom and knowledge from him on your phone. You're learning about it. You're taking it into your game and actually applying it as well. How big of a role has he played in developing the Dan Mousie that we see today?
Massively made a massive difference to my game. He hasn't changed anything technically in my game, but mentally I've learned an awful lot. So he's played 100 plus games for England, hundreds more playing ODI cricket. His record in all three formats is world class, and he's a fantastic player. And to be able to play with Belly and do a bit of him to coach me has been brilliant. We played Glamorgan this year at Glamorgan on a green wicket, which was doing a lot, and I was lucky enough to bat with him in the first innings, and I learned so much from that innings. Now, I'd probably say it's the one game of cricket where I've actually said, you know what, I've learned so much from that hour and a half I was batting with him. And that was, he basically said to me, Dan, like, there's going to be a good ball in there which is going to get you out. Just be positive. When it comes in your area, put it away. If it's a good ball, respect it. Leave it alone. Defend it. Just be fully on it here. If they come into your area, put it away. And I did that. And I think I was 20 off not many balls, just because they came into my area and I hit it. And I knew I was so clear what I wanted to do. He said, Dan, it's your decision, but maybe you come outside the crease a little bit. And that, just a few words of wisdom, went out there and I was ready. I was so clear in my plan. I got 30. I think we put on 70 or 80 on a very, very green wicket. We lost the toss and we put the team in a good position. And Belly got 90, and that was, you could see how good he was, because it was, the wicket was, yeah, like I said, we were doing quite a lot, and Belly was just patting how he always has done, and whether that's in first class cricket or test match cricket. And then going into the second innings, it was his last game in professional cricket, and to get the opportunity to bat with him, I treasure that. And that last, in his last knock. But yeah, and then went out there and I learned an awful lot going into the second innings, and that was, okay, if it comes in my area, I'm going to be positive. If it's a good boy, I'm going to respect it. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to be as positive as I can be when it comes in my area, just to put to almost flip the pressure around. If you got to look at it, if you're a batter batting on a flat wicket, there's actually quite a lot of pressure on you, because the team expect you and the bowlers expect you to score runs. Whereas batting on a green wicket, where it's doing a bit, the pressure's actually back on the bowler. So if you're positive and it comes into your area and you're secure and you're so precise, the pressure's actually completely flipped on the bowler. And then you get a few more bad balls and you end up scoring a lot of runs just because the pressure's gone from the batter straight to the bowler. I learned a great deal from that Glamorgan game. It's just a shame we couldn't get over the line. And even then, the T20 games, it just said you got so much more time than you think. We played Worcester, and Worcester was my first proper knock. We played Gloucester, and I think I went out there and needed 16 and over and got caught a dimmy wicket. But the Worcester game was literally, I remember saying to me, you got so much more time than you think. Like, almost, obviously, you, in T20 cricket, you can't really give yourself 30 balls, if that makes sense. You can't just bat normally 30 balls. You still got positive, but it's more time than you think. And I ended up doing one that game, then the Northampton game was exactly that. More time than I think. And then you end up going at a quick run route anyway, because you're going to get a boundary here and there. So yeah, I learned an awful lot from Belly. Still speak to him now about the game of cricket and where I want to get to. So, yeah, he's been a massive influence on my career.
I'm very, very happy to hear that. Dan, I almost wanted to just unpack that there, Dan, because we've just been through a lot in terms of the 2020 season. I just wanted to start off with the Glamorgan game, just because I wanted to tell you what it was like from a fan's perspective. And for anyone who watched the 2011 ICC World Cup final, India versus Sri Lanka, and Tendulkar got out and Cody came into the middle, it wasn't exactly the same as that, but I'm just saying, for a lot of Warwickshire fans, it almost would have been pretty similar, seeing Ian Bell go out and Dan Mousie staying out there in the middle. It was almost like the proverbial passing of the torch. It was quite an interesting moment, to say the least, and obviously a good one, and you went on to score that second innings in what's a very, very good county championship match. I must admit, came down to the last over, didn't it? I think we needed, was it one wicket? Came down to that?
Needed one wicket, we did indeed.
Yeah, what a game of cricket that was. Obviously, like, I was watching that for hours on that day. I'm expecting a win, but yes, fair enough. Who was it? Was it Van der Hooten at the end?
Van der Hooten it would have been, and Hogan.
Yes, Michael Hogan, yeah. Oh, And then you also mentioned there about Worcester. And you hit one of the most ridiculously big sixes that I've seen in T20 cricket for at least the past couple of years. I just wanted to ask you about that. Was that pre-planned, is in that shot? Because you almost danced down the track to him. I know Daryl Mitchell isn't exactly express pace, but there was almost this great bit of footwork and then just bang. It was like a howitzer going off. What was it? Was it pre-planned or was that just spur of the moment kind of thing?
I think I'd been 12 of 18 balls at the time, and it's when you read the game of cricket and you notice, okay, having Haney would have been on 40 at the time, and it was probably my time to then step up to try and put take a big over, get a few boundaries, and I think the ball before ran down the wicket, and he might have tripped one. I just hit it to cover, and then I was just like, okay, if he comes in my area here, I'm just going to try and hit him for six. And luckily, I didn't get anywhere near the ball, but I was so committed to the shot, and yeah, I nailed that. To be fair, I must say. I don't think I'll hit many bigger.
That's not the best six you've ever hit in your career? So far? The
biggest? Oh, it's probably might be up there, yeah. I think I hit one in Antigua, which if Boulders listens to this, he'll be laughing at. Jaden Seals was bowling, who's in the West Indies Test squad. Very good bowler. Very, very good bowler. And the wicket was very slow, and I just basically went, if it's up, I'm just going to try and hit for six. And luckily, it was like Darren Mitchell one. I was like, if it comes in my area, I'm just going to try and hit for six. And I hit that one quite far. But yeah, I'll be up there. Yeah, I'll be up there.
So yeah, what a performance as well. And then finally, that Northants game, because we've spoken about it on the podcast before with Jake Lintott and, of course, with Jeetan Patel. But I just wanted to know your thoughts in the middle again, a bit like with the Sri Lanka one, because that partnership with Adam Hoes was nothing short of exceptional. 171 fifth wicket partnership. We were 20 for four in the power play. It's an absolutely terrible start. What's going through your mind at that opportunity? Were you almost thinking about, as you said, you've got time in the middle, just rebuild and then kick on towards the end of the innings? Or how were you approaching that mentally?
I went out to bat and I was, literally crossed over the line. I was thinking, 20 for four here, like, I'll have a chat with Adam, see how he wants to go. To be fair, Hosey was fantastic. That innings was a joke. Like, that's the best knock I've seen at the other end. That is incredible. And he basically just went, I'm going to be honest, he went, we ain't got anything to lose here, Dan. We just keep on being aggressive. There's no point being 120 for five off 20 overs. You might as well be 80 all out. And we took that, and I literally start with just give the ball. I said, mate, I'll give you as much a strike as you want at the start. And he was absolutely belting it. Like, he was batting with no fear, and we both did. Went out there, knew what we wanted to do, and that was just carrying on being aggressive. And I think we get 190, 180? I'm entirely sure how many we ended up getting. And yeah, we went, and as soon as I went out there, I knew exactly what we wanted to do, because Hosey was just so clear in what he wanted to do, and that was, we're going to be as aggressive as we're going to be. If it comes in your area, whack it. And we put them under a lot of pressure. And then very, very quickly, like I spoke about a little bit earlier about the pressure flipping, the pressure completely flipped then. The wicket was an absolute belter. It was on one of the hybrid pitches, small boundaries one side, and the ball, literally you block it and it's four. So the pressure very quickly flipped, and then Hosey just, like I said, was whacking it out of the ground. And it's like a snowball effect. It just kept on happening and happening and happening. Remember Hosey speaking to me, I think it would have been after 15 overs, I think it would have been, roughly. And he was like, let's be like 130 for four. And we were on like 150, 160. And it just, like I said, talk about the snowball effect, and it just kept on happening and happening. And it was our day with a bat for both me and Hosey. But without Hosey, that wouldn't have happened, because that was an incredible innings. That's the best I've seen from the other end in my through age group cricket, whether it's academy cricket or age group cricket, under 19 cricket. That's the best I've ever seen. And to be at the other end was quality. And obviously, we didn't quite get over the line, which was also a little bit disappointing. Well, it was very, very disappointing, because we had a really good chance to win that game of cricket. And fair play to the Northants lads. Tom Taylor was whacking it. I think Graham White hit his first four of his first five balls for six.
With Graham White, it's funny that you mentioned him, because his career average before that game, I think, was about 9.6. And then he came out and hit 37 out from 13 balls. And it was just one of those where it's like, oh, if it's going to be any team, it was just going to be against Warwickshire when they needed a win to reach the quarterfinals of the Blast. It was an incredible performance. And it's funny because we had Tom Taylor on one of our previous podcasts.
Yeah, so, I've seen Tom was on there, yeah. Tom had just joined Northants, hadn't he, from Leicester. Yeah, I think it was one of his first or second games. I know his little brother very well. James Taylor is at Surrey now. We played like Midland stuff together, a little bit of under 19 stuff together. So yeah, and he just came out and absolutely belted it. And fair play to him. He won them the game for him, and ultimately they got through to the quarterfinals, which we'd have loved to have been there, because we started to play some really, really good cricket.
Yeah, it was an interesting season. And I just wanted to know, Dan, what was your highlight personally? Because you mentioned there batting in the middle with Ian Bell in his last ever game.
Yeah.
Had that magnificent partnership with Hose. What do you say was your personal highlight? What's your favourite moment from 2020?
Favourite moment for the 2020 season? Oh, probably batting with Belly in that game against Glamorgan was so lucky and privileged to do that. So it's one of the highlights. And Hosey's knock, those I can't separate them two, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, batting with Hosey for that knock was incredible from the other end, because he was hitting the ball absolutely everywhere. And then batting with Belly, who's one of the people who had big influence on my career in his last game, that was just as good. So I can't separate them two things. Yeah.
That's fair enough, I think. Two pretty incredible moments for different reasons, of course. But two pretty incredible moments. But going back to the knock with Adam Hose, there is one thing I'd like to ask, and that is about the hybrid wicket. Mm-hmm. How do you find batting on hybrid? I'm quite interested by... Lang seem to do quite well on them at Old Trafford generally, unless we get skittled out for less than 100. We have to get over 100 first. But yeah, how do you find batting on a hybrid wicket? Because, I don't know, I find it quite interesting that...
Oh, it's class as a batsman. Ball comes onto the bat, so nice. It's basically what it is. It's like tufts of artificial stitched into a wicket.
Little
holes, maybe that big, probably even smaller, with tufts of artificial on there, and the grass grows with it. Just holds it together a little bit long. So I remember, I think we played Gloucester on I can't remember which night it was now, but where we lost at home. And then there was another three games of on it. And then Worcester played, I can't remember who Worcester were playing, but it was like 200 played 200 or 220 played 220. Just held it together. So as a batter, it's lovely. Comes onto the bat nice. A bit more pace and carry, if I'm probably being honest. With a bit more pace and carry. But yeah, I love batting on them.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Adam Hose does as well if he gets all them runs on that quickly. Yeah. So let's move back onto your career as a whole, your county career as a whole. What would you say your toughest moment has been so far?
Toughest moment? So I'm facing Essex. That's my toughest moment, facing Simon Harmer. Learned a great deal about that. That was a tough moment. And then this thing was actually a thing which actually was, it wasn't a game of cricket, it wasn't a first-class game of cricket or anything. We played, it was an inter-squad game in July. I don't know whether George Garrett has mentioned it, but I got out sweeping. This is not a joke. Me and Rhodes were batting 30 overs, me and him opened the batting. Faced Alex Thompson, I got out sweeping five times in the space of about 12 balls. This isn't a lie. This is genuine happened. First one missed. Second one hit me on the pad. I basically kept on getting hit on the pad, and then got bowled around my legs. And everyone was like laughing, and I was embarrassed. I was like, what am I doing? I'm not meaning to do it. It's just happening. I'm one missing it, and two, I thought it was going down leg side every single time, and it wasn't. And I came away from that, and I was like, that ain't right. Like, that shouldn't happen. I remember the coach was speaking to me, and they were like, they were really, really good with me, actually, because they saw how difficult it was for me at the time, what happened. And then I went away from that, and then just went, okay, I'm going to put that away for a little bit. If it comes in my area, okay, I'm going to play, but I'm just going to play straight. And it was a really turning wicket. I learned an awful lot from that, because it was like, you've got to trust your defence, which is one thing, which in age group cricket and second tier cricket, you face spin bowlers who give you a lot of bad balls, not as consistent, where you face the best bowlers who basically just drag you forward every single time. You've got to learn to trust that defence. And I learned an awful lot from that. And to be fair to myself, I actually came back from that and I learned an awful lot and ended up doing really well playing against spin, because that's one of my strengths is playing spin, and I just had to tweak something, and it was difficult because all the lads are laughing at you, but I learned an awful lot about that. And then I know the coaches speak about that to me now, about understanding that and then putting that into action.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's all a learning curve really, especially when you're as early on in your career as you are. Mm-hmm. You're 6 games into your first class career for Warwickshire, or professional career for Warwickshire. Yeah, I guess it's all a learning curve really. But yeah, kind of staying on them with the sort of the toughest theme, who would you say you potentially already answered this, but who would you say the toughest bowler you've faced is?
Simon Harmer.
Yeah, also. Well, if you had to choose someone else other than Harmer.
Hardest one I faced?
Lintott in the nets.
Yeah, fashion Jake in the indoor school. My eyes aren't great anyway, and he's a little bit dim in there at the time, and he's behind these googlies, and I could not see the ball. So usually with the white seat, with the white ball, you can see the green seam, and I just saw a white object come down at me. I said to him, "I can't see the ball here." And he came and bought googlies, and luckily I came out. They came out of the session okay, because I was just ended up just. It was 2:20, so I just swept and swept and swept and swept. So it didn't matter which way it was turning. Second hardest. Faced Josh Tung a couple of times now, and we played Worcester on second first test game at New Road on a wicket which was, as you saw by the scores, was a very slow, low, pretty dead wicket for that game of cricket, and it was buying a few bounces to me, and it just weren't getting up. It's the second time I faced Josh, and that was the second time that's happened. The ball just wasn't getting up. I remember having to graft hard that, because he hit me on the ribs there, and I had to find a different way of playing it, because I duck underneath it, sway out the way. I had to find a different way to play him, and it was late on in the day. So that was a tough challenge. So yeah, so my first lesson in my games of cricket, playing first class cricket, there, that's been tough. And then the Glamorgan game, that was tough as well, because the ball was moving around off the seam a lot.
Yeah. Would you rather bat on that Glamorgan wicket or on one of the wickets to prepare for tests in New Zealand?
Cam Williams is doing all right on them, isn't
he? Yeah, that is very true. To be fair, that is very true.
Like I said, with the green wickets, the pressure flips very quickly onto the bowler. So yeah, you've got a bat on any wicket. We've grown up playing in England where the ball moves all sorts, and then you go over to the subcontinent and the ball doesn't move off the strip, but playing spin, it's doing all sorts.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the good things about cricket is, you know, there's different challenges around the world.
Yeah.
Whereas in other sports, maybe the actual physical conditions of the pitch are generally going to be the same. Yeah, yeah, but in cricket, obviously, they vary pretty quite a lot. So I guess that's one of the...
Yeah, very a lot.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Jay. They're very pronounced, aren't they? Very pronounced differences. Yeah. Because playing in England or New Zealand, as Danny have just mentioned, the lateral movement, the seam movement. And then in India, there's not as much, but then it turns absolute corners. I mean, I wouldn't mind a bit of a bowl in India on a nice turning track. Maybe Chennai, Mumbai on the Maidans. But yeah, it is very... Again, it's just another element of cricket, which makes it such a wonderful game, I suppose. And Dan, looking forward to this season, just before we touch upon your personal almost improvements and areas that you want to improve heading into this season, I just wanted to bring up one person. And he's someone that I've been asked quite a few questions about, and that is Jacob Bethell. Now, he's just been signed on a 3-year deal, I believe, for the Bears. 17 years of age, born in Barbados. What can you tell us about him? What have you seen from Jacob? And do you think that he could be one for the future, per se?
Yeah, he's an absolute gun. Proper player. So Jacob was obviously from Barbados, still lives over there. Goes to school in rugby school. So he's with Michael Powell, obviously former Bears captain. A very good man, very good player. And when I was in the under-17s, he was my manager and very good to bounce ideas off. Jake, very, very good player. Very good left-arm spinner. And he's batting. There's not many people I've seen at that age as good as him. I don't think I have seen anyone that age as good as him. He's a proper, proper player. And he came over here and he played at Kenilworth Wardens, which was my home club. That and Nether Whittaker, and yeah, he's a proper player. He's a gun, and he's one for the future definitely. And yeah, he's he's one player as a fan I'd be really excited to see where he can go, because he can go anywhere in his career, and I'm looking forward to for him to join us in the professional squad when he's back with us.
Well, there you go, Bears fans, someone to look at, something to get, well, I'd say quietly excited for. Of course, he's just 17 years of age, let's not expect him to be ridiculous right from the outset, but that's very good to hear, Dan, very, very good. But in terms of your personal development then, Dan, what are you looking to improve upon in your game heading into next season? Are there any specific areas or, I want to say, aspects of your game that you're looking to really develop in 2021?
So far, we've obviously been in for only a few weeks. Obviously, I had time off at Christmas, but 2 weeks previous to that, I was working really, really hard with Ian Westwood and Rob Yates on playing spin, getting the Merlin out, putting the spin mat down, and just trusting our defence forward and back. And that's one thing I've been working on. See, playing spin is a real positive of mine. It's a good thing. That's one of my strengths in the game, but it's trusting your defence against the top end best bowlers in county cricket and in international cricket, and learning how to play those sort of bowlers. That's one thing I've been working on. And apart from that, it's just I keep it very, very simple, my batting. The way I just try, as long as my head's in a good position and I'm balanced, I'm absolutely fine. If one of those is off, and then a few other things creep in. So those are the two things, batting-wise, where I keep very simple. And that's basically balance and my head position. If I get that, sorted, I mean, everything else just obviously follows on, really. Can't really think of the word, but those are the two things I keep very clear in my mind. And batting,
the rest falls basically as soon as you've got your head position.
Exactly. So I think Kevin Peterson speaks about it in that's his head position, and that's one thing I've learned. If my head position, I'm getting my head into the ball, everything follows, which is really good, because head position is so important batting. And then bowling is another three simple things, and that's keep my shoulders level and my feet level when I'm on my run up, and that's then next thing is my alignment when bowling, because sometimes you go too far across and then your action goes, and then it's just being nice and cool. I'm working with Pop Welsh, who's the Bears bowling coach, the acting head coach at the minute. He's been fantastic, my bowling, him and Min Patel have been absolutely brilliant. So those are the things I'm working on at this moment in time in training.
To be fair, Dan, we actually haven't really touched upon your bowling, because you do have a wicket. Do you remember who your first ever wicket was?
Yeah. Chris Dent.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
Decent bit of bowling there. Got a tiny bit of grip off the surface. I know Denty did try to absolutely clobber you out of Birmingham, but...
Yeah, it was in the footholds. It was literally hot by the stump, so where they're scratching middle. So a little bit turn out. But yeah, over the years, I've worked really, really hard on my bowling in the last probably 2 or 3 years. Want to make myself a genuine all-rounder. So yeah, that's one thing. So I'm working really hard on.
I like that. Yeah. Another option, yeah. I suppose, for the Bears. But Dan, I do just also want to touch upon this as a fellow off-spinner, of course, with absolutely nowhere near as much talent. But what do you say your favourite delivery is as an off-spinner?
Drift away, turn through the gate. I think everyone has that.
Classic.
Or the old half-tracker caught deep square leg, wicket to wicket, isn't it? As long as I get a wicket, I'd take anything. It could bounce twice.
As long as it's got a wicket under your name in the wickets column, it doesn't matter, does it?
Nope, it doesn't matter. Ask any bowler that. Could be a short, wide, long up, court point, wicket to wicket.
As long as it's a wicket, it's a wicket, isn't it? Do you ever find, I mean, I guess this might be quite a confusing question, but do you ever find your batting develops talking to bowling coaches and your bowling develops talking to batting coaches? Because obviously they're kind of looking at you know, your game from the opposite point of view, if you like. Do you ever find that kind of helps your game develop?
Never really spoke to the bowling coach about my batting, like specifically. If I speak to a bowler and who are bowling at me, they can help how they're going to try and get me out, and how they think I'm lining up, whether it's over around the wicket. And I remember speaking to Liam Norwell. I think it was just when we came back from lockdown, and came around the wicket to me, and he basically said to me, I came around the wicket because I thought you'd be a little bit more vulnerable around the wicket, just seeing how you could change your angles. And then he quickly said, actually, the way you lined up around the wicket was actually really, really good. So he went back over again, And that was a difference between the winter, where he was coming around the wicket and he felt like he was more in the game, to then me changing that and then him going back over the wicket in the summer nets, because I was lining up well around the wicket. So yeah, I have used bowlers to see how I'm going, where they think that my weaknesses are, or the way they're trying to get me out, because that's actually really, really helpful.
Yeah,
as a batter.
Yeah, it's just something I've never really thought about before, and I was curious to see, obviously, yourself, you know, having almost both sides of the coin. Yeah. Curious to see if you've ever sort of, you know, used that, if you like. So let's move on then to the final question before we get on to teammates. I mean, it's quite a broad question, really, but what do you really want to achieve within the rest of your cricketing career? I'll say it's a really, really broad question. But do you have any, like, goals in mind, especially?
Yeah, I have a few goals, obviously. I want to play Test match cricket. I want to play all three formats for England. Remember, I'll go back to Ian Bell. We were playing Worcester, and he put me on the spot, and he was like, "What do you want to do in your career?" And I was like, "I just want to play for England." He was like, "No, what do you want to do?" And I came back the next day and said what I wanted to do, and play, obviously, it's a dream of mine to play Test cricket, but have a really good career in Test cricket, 100 Tests, that'd be lovely. I think everyone's dream is that, but that's really drives me on. And then winning all trophies for Warwickshire, winning Ashes for England, home and away, I'd love to do that. And those are the goals I set myself. I've got a few other goals along the road, which really keep me really motivated. So yeah, winning all trophies for England, for Warwickshire, winning the Ashes, home and away, World Cups, that sort of stuff. It's all a dream, but you've got a dare to dream sometimes, haven't you? And that really motivates me to go on and to good things in the game.
Exactly. And yeah, just to all the Warwickshire fans, and I suppose England fans as well, across all three formats, it's very, very nice to hear that. And I think it is a fantastic attitude. And Dan, I mean, obviously, we both wish you the very, very best of luck, not only in the next stages of your career for the Bears, but also on the international stage as well. I mean, we'd absolutely love to see you out there in the middle, at Edgbaston or the MCG. But yeah, we wish you the very, very best of luck with that. And of course, we wish you best heading into this season as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Oh, no worries. But that does bring us to a conclusion to today's main segment. So that does bring us on to the concluding segment. It's a fan favourite of the County Cricket podcast. We absolutely love doing it as well. And that is, of course, teammates. So, Dan, we spoke a bit before the podcast. You are aware of this, aren't you? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So just for the listeners at home, then, teammates is basically just an assortment of questions relating to Dan's Warwickshire teammates. They can be pretty much anything cricket-related, non-cricket-related. But yes, we're just going to find out a bit more about Dan's teammates at Edgbaston. So Dan, are you ready for teammates?
Yep, I'm ready.
Perfect. So our first question for today's teammate segment is, who is the teacher's pet at Warwickshire County Cricket Club?
Teacher's pet? Oh, that's a tough question, that. No one, I don't think there really is one at the minute. I'm going to go Rob Yates, because he's one of my good mates and we just love batting. That's just what we do for hours upon hours, me and Rob Yates. I'm going to go Rob Yates.
Fair one there. I'm pretty sure George Garrett said, I think he said either you or Rob Yates, funnily enough.
That matches up in that sense then.
We love batting, yeah.
Good attitude.
I'll get enough of it. Yeah, fair enough. The next one, this is quite an interesting one. Best nickname.
Best nickname? I'm trying to think now. Put me on the spot. Mine's gone blank. George Garrett, the Pint Man.
What's the origin?
The Pint Man. I don't really. It's obviously to do with pints, I think. Pints of beer or whatever. And he's called the Pint Man. Don't know the original origins of that, but usually if Gaz puts something in our group chat or says something, I was like, "Oh, the Pint Man." And yeah, that's what he does. I call him the Pint Man.
There you go, then.
Yeah,
fair enough. I don't think we asked him that one. So
no, we didn't.
Yeah,
we should have. And yeah, at least you know what? As well, at least it shows a bit of creativity. It's better than just Belly or Birch.
Yeah, like
the usual ones.
A shortening of a name. Yeah,
Wokesy.
Yeah,
it's just the English way, isn't it? But yeah, glad to see a bit more creativity from the Bears. So Dan, the next question: who is the team DJ in the Warwickshire dressing room?
Was Ian Bell.
What are the tunes?
Belly put a mixture of few. He was. I'm going to give him a lot of credit. His tunes were very good. I gave him a lot of stick in South Africa regarding his tunes, but to be fair to him, he's done very, very well. I think he's been passed to Henry Brooks. I think that's what Henry wants to happen. But whether that happens or not, I don't know. Robert, because obviously with the bubbles and stuff like that at the minute, and only being able to mix in certain groups, Rob Yates is our so-called DJ.
Fair enough. Do you trust Henry Brooks to take up that mantle come the summer? Or do you?
No, I'm not sure. I'll have to wait and see, because he's got some pretty interesting music, let's say.
Fair enough. Well, I guess you can only answer that question in the summer when he's been given a fair chance.
Correct.
The next one, biggest prankster.
Biggest prankster was Ian Bell again. Not anymore. Funny enough, actually, we were going to La Manga, and he put a bog roll in my, because obviously when you all pack in the certain weights, you've got to fit under. And he put a massive bog roll, like the communal bog rolls, in my bag at the bottom of my kit bag. So it was really heavy, and I had to go from my bag to find out what, and it was a massive bog roll. So he's done a few things. Prankster now. Go with Ryan Sidebottom. For me, I don't know whether he does that to anyone else, but he definitely does it to me.
What does Ryan do?
Do something quite random, something will go missing for me. Okay. Don't know whether there's anyone else, something will go missing, or he'll say something, or he'll have a pop at me or something. But he's a good lad, Ryan. Me and him play club cricket together. So, yeah, he's a brilliant guy.
Fair enough. If you want to get him back, Dan, Joe, you'll remember this from the Scott Steele podcast. Do you remember one of the pranks? And it was to sign the other person's gear.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, just get the pens out, just sign it out. When he comes back, you'll think, what on earth is this?
What, on his bowling boots?
Anything. Pads, bats, helmets,
or
whatever.
Take his Norwich shirt.
Moving on to our next one then. Who has got the best celebrations in the Warwickshire dressing room?
Henry Brooks. Like, when he gets a wicket, he's going mental. Like, his veins are popping out. Jake Lintott loves a celebration. Gets a wicket and he's properly fired up. So out of them two.
Good choices there. Yeah.
No, it's not. Tim Bresnan.
Oh, of course, yeah, Brez.
Forgot Brez. Sorry about that. Tim Bresnan, actually. Nice, like, I was doing 12th man on the drinks, and Brez has pulled off a diving stop, thrown down one stump, and the outfield was burnt, like, no grass in it, and his knee slide. He's done it more than once as well, to be fair to Brez. And he literally didn't get anywhere. He literally just slid and that was stopped because it was so dry. I'm going to go with Tim Bresnan.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I've seen one of his... Well, actually, I didn't. I left a game early when I did a knee sliding planks.
Yeah.
The only cricket game I've ever left early. The only sports game I've ever left early. That was not a good day. But anyway, back on to teammates. A little bit of a two-parter here. Who would you say the worst dressed and the best dressed are?
Worst dressed?
Yeah.
People will say me. Like the 19s lads, Boulders, all of them would have said me. In the Warwickshire dress, I'm going to go with Henry Brooks. He comes into training in some very interesting gears. Ed Pollock, another one, comes in some very interesting gears. But yeah, Henry Brooks, he'll come in matching tracksuits. He'll come in with massive chains, like, dangling down. Chain's okay, that's fine, but he'll have a couple on. Bucket hats, stuff like that.
Like he's going to a festival kind of thing.
Yeah, that is festival vibe with a man bag there.
That's yeah, him. Fair enough. What about best dressed?
Who takes that award? Go Craig Miles. That's very, very slick. Just keeps it very simple. I'd say he's best dressed.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that is a fair choice. Also, seems to keep his hair quite nice, Craig Miles. A bit like Chris Wokes, I suppose. Never seems to be hair out of place.
Yeah, he has. He does have a good bar on it, doesn't he, to be fair?
Certainly does. Next question, Dan. This is a very Warwickshire-specific one, and it is a brilliant one. Who do you say is the most likely to join the fans in the Hollies during a game?
George Garrett.
Yeah. Singing his Babar Azam song.
Yeah, George Garrett, 100%. George, yeah. I can't look past him, to be perfectly honest.
Fair enough. I thought it would have been between him, maybe, and Bresnan as well. Bresnan comes across as the kind of guy to, you know, with his knee slides and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah.
Nah, it's George Garrett for me.
He runs away with it, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
The next one, who's the karaoke king and what is their song choice?
Karaoke king? Michael Burgess in the manga, he sang a song. Can't remember what song it was. But that was good. That was, yeah, he was very good at that, actually. I'm going to go with Michael Burgess.
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Suppose fits the bill. Next one, Dan. Who do you say is the social media addict in the Warwickshire dressing room?
Good question, actually. We actually ain't got that many. Like, do you mean like who posts a lot?
Or just constantly. Who's posting
it or always on it?
Oh, it's not that. I'm good. It's not actually that big in our dressing room.
Yeah, I guess that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. We're pretty quiet on that. Yeah, it's a tough one. Pretty quiet. Henry might post something every so often. Yeah, I'll go with Henry Brooks. But we're gonna be honest. We're pretty quiet on that. We don't really post a great deal. Jake Lintott maybe. Occasionally loves a tweet.
He loves the tweet.
Yeah, we'll go them. George Garrett loves a tweet. So we'll go out of them three. But there's no real big social media people in the dressing room.
Fair enough. The next two are going to be quite hotly debated, no doubt. So the first one is best footballer.
Best footballer. Rhodes, I think he is. To be fair, good footballer. Alex Thompson, good footballer. I'll go with Alex Thompson, but Rhodes isn't far behind.
Fair enough.
I think Alex Thompson played a bit of academy football at Crewe. So that's, yeah, he can strike football. Out of them two, Rhodes, I think, might play a little bit semi-pro, he says, but yeah, out of them two.
Think about Alex Thompson as well, Mr. PE teacher, probably learning it with his students. I'll tell you another couple who I would have said, obviously, Dan, wouldn't have been in your first class season. But beforehand, Keith Barker probably would have been up there as well, wouldn't he? He played professional football, I believe, for Blackburn, that's who it was.
Wokes is supposed to be a good footballer. I haven't seen much of Wokes kicking football, but so I think he was at Walsall as a kid. So yeah, he's another one I've forgotten about.
Always England lads. Yeah, they're all pretty good footballers.
Yeah.
100%. And then again, this is one which, I don't know, generates some debate. Who's the best golfer at Warwickshire?
Oh, best golfer. Now this is everyone loves the golf at Warwickshire. Pollock plays an awful lot. Like during lockdown when the golf course was open, I think he might have missed 2 days over a couple of months period. He's playing every day. He was. Ed Pollock or Sam Hain? Sam Hain, good golfer.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So out of them two.
Fair enough. And the final one then. A bit going back to like the cricket theme ones. Now this is quite an interesting one to end on. Who's the most likely to get timed out?
I have no idea. Sam Hain maybe, or myself.
Hainey, why yourself? Why myself?
Because usually I might have picked up the wrong glove, or I'm not quite ready, or something like that will happen. Chewing gum. Hainey used chewing gum. When I'm doing 12 man, he's very specific. So I don't like that bat, or I need some chewing gum, stuff like that sort of stuff. So yeah, probably me or Sam Hain.
Fair enough. Have you ever seen anyone get timed out? Like in any level of cricket they've played? No.
No, no.
It's not very common anymore, is it? But
I've never ever seen it.
Ah, fair enough.
Rare, isn't it? It's something which, to be honest, 2021, if we are obviously allowed back out on the village greens, who knows? Probably wouldn't affect my average anyway, to be honest. So Dan, that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. So just before we go, do you have any kind of concluding words just before we end today's podcast?
Thank you very much for having me, lads. Thoroughly enjoyed talking about cricket and stuff like that. But I've really, really enjoyed it. So thank you very much, boys.
Oh, well, no problem, Dan. It's been our absolute pleasure. And of course, as a Warwickshire fan and Joe as a Lanx fan as well, wish you the very best of luck heading into 2021 and beyond. For all the listeners out there, remember the name Dan Mousley. I don't want to sound like Ian Bishop, but it's definitely someone to keep tabs on over the next few years. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.